Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on which part of the world you're coming into us from today. We are hosting our season 2, episode 9 webcast and podcast. Andrea, every single time we do one of these, I am marveled by the fact that we get four even more brilliant panelists. And I'm sure we're throwing the people from season 2, episode 8 under the bus here, but we've got a really smart global expert crew that is going to talk about talent, career, and skills in the future work. And the interesting thing is we had scheduled this back in November or December, and then this crazy thing called the pandemic happened. So I'm sure this topic and pandemic in terms of Venn diagram is pretty strong. We're going to probably get into that today. I just want to make a couple announcements off the top before we get started and people file in at the top of the hour. We hosted a similarly brilliant webcast called The Future of Finance a couple of weeks ago. It's now up and online. And just if you're interested in the future, we're talking about work today, but finance 2 weeks ago. We actually do have a global collective that we built together. There's about 50 plus of us around the world. And our mission is to unfurl foresights and build a community of people that are interested in making sense of this world that we're in. If you're interested, certainly join us at hello@futureproofingnext.com. And we're introducing a new thing associated with today's webcast. You know how there is always the talk show that happens at 11 o'clock, and then there's the talk show that happens at 12:30? We're doing a very similar thing where it's like this one will be four global panelists, and kind of like we're going to actually take a very suit on approach to what we're doing, but come 12:30 we'll have kind of the no hold bar discussion on maybe what we've heard, what we might not have heard in this discussion. And so if you're hyper interested, join us at 12:30 at the link below. I want to welcome my co-host Andrea Cates into the discussion as well, our community manager who pulls it all together, Joanne. Thank you very much again, Joanne. Andrea, how are we doing pandemic-wise today?
One of the things that's interesting is every single time we have a conversation about pandemic, there's a new perspective. And I think this is a really great time for us to question two things, pandemic. There's the whole optimist-pessimist, which I think is interesting. And then I think the second is that this is a really wonderful time for people to learn how to stop trying to predict everything. The idea of prediction as your only measure of are we doing a good job as leaders, I think is misplaced. And so this is a great time to future proof, which of course, as you know, Sean, is about seeing data as it comes in, trying to figure out, discern some truths, and then translate that into what to do about it. And that's what I'm seeing pandemic wise is every conversation used to be around trying to get it right, like how did we miss it? And now it's more about what do we do as great leaders.
Yeah, and as evidence of that, we had a meta trend survey that we did last year where we asked, what is the thing that would probably most disrupt your business? And having a health-based, germ-based global pandemic was 16th on our list. So lo and behold, it happened. People were surprised. Now we have to deal with it. So we're going to accelerate into introducing our panelists. But I thought before we did that, we might want to queue up the topic with some recent headlines and some stuff we've done. We built this kind of future of work model, and I guess I've shaded out the green part today that we're going to be talking about. I think in future webcasts and podcasts, we might cover other parts of this little infographic here. So today we're covering off talent, career, and skills. This is on the heels of the New York Times just coming out, and they fairly sensationalist graph in terms of what kind of job claims are happening in the U.S., massive levels of unemployment, not seen since the era of the Depression. So certainly bad news. I know certainly a lot of empathy in terms of just the suffering that people are going through economically and all the other challenges involved. You know, certainly everybody's become kind of a pandemic expert nowadays in terms of the future of work. Interesting New Republic article. Gartner's come out with its survey, which, you know, never let a consultant not look at a crisis as an opportunity. But I did find two of their stats interesting. Remote work, the perception was 30% of people were doing some level of it pre-pandemic. They expected, and these are kind of HR executives, 48% of people to be doing something along the lines of remote work ongoing. And then replacement of full-time work, 32% of companies are actively looking at not only during this period, but afterward, looking at contingent workers that replace full-time. So perhaps some more bad news if you don't like working at home or you don't like doing freelance work. I thought this was an optimistic article. One of our associates, Tim Labreck, had written an article about when, if not now, and talking about, do we really have to go to work again? You know, isn't this a great time to be alive and actually reconsider points of view and change? So I'm not too sure. Do you know Tim, Andrea?
Yeah, well, so we're part of the House of Beautiful Business Collective that's out of Berlin and meets in Lisbon. And Tim wrote a book called The Business Romantic, and he's a good friend of our community. One of the things I love about Tim is not only does he have incredible practitioner experience, but he had a vision to seed a movement and to really think differently about, are we employees? Are we leaders? Are we customers? Or are we people? And when I first read The Business Romantic, I thought, well, you know, I'm too serious and left brain and analytical to think about fluffy stuff like people, soft skills, leadership. This seems a little fluffy. And the more I have reflected on his wisdom, the more I realize, especially in the face of this pandemic, that this is exactly the kind of timeout that we need to remember that, you know, what do people do when everything changes? And the human things that people do and the connections and the longing. And I think that it's remarkable. And so Tim Labreck, really recommend the book, The Business Romantic, and look up the House of Beautiful Business, the whole community, because they're doing remarkable things in this time of pandemic.
All right, I'm going to accelerate through some things here. We have some fodder for the mind, some chewing gum for the mind here. We actually did a few months ago look at leadership skills of the future. We identified 21 of them, and lo and behold, we got to a list of 7. So we may query some of our panelists in terms of whether they agree that adaptive intelligence and experimentation and purpose-driven is the cat's meow, or maybe there's something else that should be replacing those. We may have debates about talent today. You know, what's AI going to do? Is the gig economy going to rule? Is diversity going to be embraced post-pandemic? And you know, will we have a workforce that's very mismatched and unprepared or very empowered moving forward? We'll talk about skills today, and in terms of, you know, are we looking at more specialist skills or more generalist? Are we leaning on schools to deliver all of our education, or will it be lifelong learning? Careers, will people have less or more than 14 jobs in their lifetime? Will technology eliminate jobs? Will they increase them? Maybe we'll talk about that today. And strictly from a pandemic standpoint, you know, are we looking at unemployment that might be structural in nature, or will we have an incredible rebound? And then, you know, given the unemployment numbers, is the workplace going to become more cutthroat and competitive? Or are we going to see a more inclusive, friendlier workplace as we all return back to work? Those are some things that we're going to go through, but I think we should just introduce our panelists now, Andrea, because you know, they've been waiting in the screen here, waiting to get their opinions heard.
Well, I'll introduce first, because we'll have all four of them talk a little bit right now, but I'll introduce two of them, and then I'll let Sean introduce two of them. We have Sulaima Gurani, and one of the things that's amazing about Sulaima is that she embodies all of the global perspectives. She's lived in many places, has a very diverse background, and also has a lot of communities that she has seeded. And so part of it is that she's built 4 companies and taken them to profit. She's an expert in future of work. She's been just recently named number 30 by Thinkers 50 in terms of their new and emerging talent on the radar. She's worked with corporations. She's a co-founder of a software company called Women Reignite. And so she's currently based in Palo Alto, but I'll let her talk about her diverse background behind that. And they say that they're helping women make great decisions. And this notion is a big vision of impacting 200 million women by 2040. And then Matteo Ricci, we're excited about because he has a book called Talents and Rebels. He has tremendous experience both in fintech and the world of finance, traditional corporations. But he also brings this global view of what talent is really all about. We had a good debate recently on In the Author Studio, which is another program that we did together. And his perspective on what type of talent really needs to step forward at different moments in corporate initiatives is pretty remarkable. And his book is compelling. We really recommend that as well. On to you, Sean.
Wagner is hailing to us from New York today, I believe. He is head of work, future of work at Prudential. And one of the interesting things about Wagner is he has so much different industry, corporate industry experience coming to the table. He was previous IBM, previous Starwood Hotels. And so I'm very interested to get his impression in terms of, you know, how things are different across different industries today. He's also a psychotherapist, I believe, as well. You can verify that for me later. So hopefully he can put us all on the couch later and bring us down from this pandemic high that we might be on. Karen Kosher is, and I'm going to get the title wrong as well, because I know it's on a future slide and I always get titles wrong, but she hails to us from North Carolina today. She is head of learning and is it employee experiences? I'm going to get that one wrong. You know what? You better jump in here, Karen, and give me your official title right now.
Yes, it's, I lead talent and learning experiences for Microsoft.
Oh, learning experiences, not employee experiences. My bad. Incredible, rich history in terms of this topic in particular, learning and skills. I know you're also, I think, involved in Upskill America, which kind of is an interesting not-for-profit in terms of trying to get a matching of skills with kind of corporate and working talent. So we have a massively interesting panel. I thought each one of our panelists might want to chime in on, you know, we shouldn't host an entire future of work without admitting to ourselves this enormously disruptive time that we're in, the business interruptions that have happened and how we're dealing with it. Maybe we'll just go around the horn, starting with the way we introduce people. Just what's your 20 seconds on A, personally, what you're going through, and B, what you think maybe the biggest challenge of business might be. And so maybe Sulaima, if you want to chime in.
First of all, thank you so much for inviting me. It is a great honor to be on this panel. Very impressive profiles that I'm here featured with. Future of work. Yes, I work out of my home studio as most people in California do right now. We have still home and shelter order. I have been remote and working online and virtual for more than 4 years. I serve more than 40 countries online. So for me, it has not been a big change. My biggest change is that I'm not traveling. So that has been the biggest part and change of my life. And of course, homeschooling kids. I'm sure that some people can chip in here and say that has been a great game changer. But you know, this is my fourth recession in life, fourth. And so I have that resilience muscle. In the end, jobs, it's customers. So one thing that I will, you know, highlight is, do you understand how to read the trends and tendencies in the market? And there's not going to be less jobs. Yeah, for a period of time, of course, a few years, but there will be millions of new jobs. So the winning game of all this is really a mental game. As an entrepreneur, you have to be responsive. You have to be flexible. You have to understand economics and finance, because otherwise you're going to dilute yourself and go bankrupt. So there's a lot of things going on right now that really benefits, especially the baby boomers, I would say, because you have been through recessions before, Generation X as well. But I do feel very sorry for Generation Z and Alpha, because we promised them, remember, until just after New Year, that there will be low employment and economic stability. And overnight, basically, that changed completely. So they do not have that muscle. They have no idea how to cope with recession and high employment. So yeah, it's a big game changer. Just recently, we talked about software and robots, how they are going to take over the world and how they would be our biggest enemy. Now it turns out that it's actually the virus.
It's a good reframing of what world we're in. Certainly, my bet would have been a cyber virus taking us down. And lo and behold, old school health raised its head. How is Prudential and just a general perspective on pandemic?
Hi, everyone. For me as well, it's funny that you mentioned the baby boomers. I'm at the end of the baby boomer generation. And I started my career as a social worker working with AIDS and HIV when there was no cure, there was no med. So at that time, we had to build this resilience that has helped me throughout my career. Being an immigrant from Brazil as well, you know, when you have so many challenges to overcome early in life, you start building the muscle of adaptability. And to be honest, when I spent my last 20 years working on leadership development and coaching and all that and consulting, when I look back, is the enduring skills and attributes of the leader who is going to take us through this challenge as well. So I was thinking more about the digital leader, how important it is for leaders today to accept their so they can move faster forward. So in one sense, when I see the list that you created, to me, there is one missing component, which is self-acceptance. The unconditional self-acceptance will lead us to learn faster, to accept others' opinions and innovation much quicker, and allow that we all have felt one time or another in a new experience, you feel, I don't have the capability to overcome this. But at the end of the day, we all have the capability of learning. And self-acceptance will allow you to say that you don't know. So in a way, COVID is making us much flatter. The organization became much flatter just by the fact that we need to rely on each other to make things happen. So distributed power and this digital leadership, because I was on another call the other day and a leader had three people helping him with the WebEx. That's not the future. You don't need three people full time to help you do a webinar. You can do it yourself. So that kind of leadership is going to promote. And I think the culture is going to emerge as to a very equal workplace, which is going to be virtual, but it's going to be very equal. So I'm fine. I'm in Westchester, New York. I'm fortunate enough to be in a place where we have low incidence of the virus infections, but we are very connected to the world. I think what the bottom line is that this is a pandemic made us much more connected to every single layer of our society. And now we are forced to see things that we are not willing to look at. Now we are gonna all look back and say, hey, we're all in this together and we are interdependent. So I'm very optimistic. I'm more on the optimistic side because I know we can make a world that's better than today. And I think it depends on leadership.
I like it. We like to call ourselves rational optimists. So I think we found two people already. Let's see if Matteo can continue the streak here on optimism. You're okay to be a pessimist too, though, by the way. Just all views are appreciated. Thanks for that, Wagner. I think, Matteo, you might have a Lisbon perspective, because the more global people I talk to, the more this pandemic has been experienced a little bit differently, maybe time-wise, but also the profoundness of the impact. So yourself personally, professionally, and maybe even a European perspective as well.
So thank you for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to meet you all as well and to hear, you know, perspectives from people that I've never met. I actually love it. I love it already. I can't really count how many recessions I went through, but I certainly broke several records in this pandemic. I never slept for like 40 days in the same bed, never spent 2 months with my kids without interruption, never stayed 2 months without traveling. So there are a lot of outside of my comfort zone or my usual life experiences for which I'm super grateful. And for the chronic, I got a new job and literally building a new startup since the pandemic has started, because since I left the corporate life in 2013, that's my way of work already. So in terms of, handling the work, changes zero. Of course, everything else, of course, kicked in as brutally as, for everyone else. And the sentiments I'm having is still of a profound gratitude. I actually wrote about it recently. There are mechanisms that were installed since COVID kicked in that, for example, made me call my parents every day for 2 months. And now that confinement is slowly over, I have not broken this habit, you know, because I, as stupid as it might sound, I realized that they were looking forward to it, you know, after a while. And I could never have discovered it, you know, without this exceptional time, because nobody has, at 50 years old, or like very few people, I imagine, have a video talk with their parents at my age, right? And then this is like one example, but I have many, because the fact that you have so much more time to reflect in, you know, the, I want to say which type of facts you want to give, but, you know, without, because one of my, like, sort of ironic favorite books is the Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, right? Which is, so it's in that sense that I'm talking about. And apologies if I, as an Italian, I take the poetic license to, like, maybe, you know, give the F word for the first time in this panel, but, you know, forgive me about the context. And maybe, like, so beside this huge sentiment of gratitude and of, you know, I think that what personally I've learned about myself and about what I want to do is that I diverted most of the professional and personal efforts towards impact, simply because this time allowed me to think that this is what I want to do. So as any, like, a pivotal moment, you know, so if anything, it has been a pivotal moment in the way I want to redirect my life. And so, yeah, I think I'm going to be the third positive in a row about that. Optimist in a row.
Wonderful. And we should do a full podcast on whether the F word is a swear word anymore. Like, that would be an interesting piece as well, Matteo. I don't know if it's an Italian thing necessarily, but very profound thoughts, though. And I'll let Karen play anchorwoman on this in terms of summating our pandemic experience. Karen, you've got legions of people working in Microsoft right now. I've personally become, I don't know how many teams engagements, video engagements I've been invited to. How does it all work behind the curtain? Tell us how everything is going.
Well, everything is going fine. I mean, so first of all, I'll start with my own personal situation. As you mentioned, I'm in North Carolina, and I'm in a somewhat of a rural area. And so I've spent my time, because I'm not traveling as with the rest of the panel, I've had so much more time to embrace and enjoy nature, you know, perfect some new skills and enjoy some new hobbies. And it's really just been a terrific time, right, to renew in a variety of ways. So work-wise, as you can imagine, there are a lot of people at Microsoft, as you mentioned, that are behind the scenes keeping everything running, because there's so many people in corporations around the world that are working differently, right? And that requires a whole lot of infrastructure. But what I would say, just in general, what really strikes me, and just I'll use an example of CVS here in the United States, CVS looking to hire 50,000 people in 24 hours. And the way they went about doing it was to basically think ecosystem, right? And so they embraced furloughed employees from their business partners, which is not unique to CVS. It's something that a lot of companies have been looking into and doing. And so what really strikes me is creativity, right? Just thinking about the problems or the opportunities very differently, and then embracing the ecosystem as a way to solve the problems. And so, you know, you're seeing it time and time again with a lot of the companies out there with the challenges they have looking at their broader stakeholder group or their ecosystem. So I think it's just another way of getting the work done. But those are a couple of the ahas for me, and I'll turn it back to you. I know that we're doing this quickly, so I'll get it back to the bulk of the agenda.
Always appreciate it, but no, interesting thoughts. And we're going to have you back on. I think now we're going to transition into kind of 6 or 7 minute legs with each one of our panelists and maybe go deep on your own professional kind of face to the world of skills and talent. Andrea, this one's over to you. Hopefully you can.
So I'd like to welcome Sulaima. We've introduced her before, and I would like for her to also add a few things about all of the, you know, on paper, you might be intimidated to talk to Sulaima, but to know her personally is to understand that she's a woman that lives this notion of the muscle of adaptation, the muscle of resilience, and the muscle of leading movements just by nature. And so I'd like to just bring Sulaima on. I'd like to talk with you about a couple of things that are really important. It's when we think about talent, when we think about careers, when we think about skills, the first question is, what is it that you would have talked about pre-pandemic on the topics of talent, careers, and skills that today I would call is irrelevant or even tone deaf? You know, what doesn't apply now, or what have you thought through differently? So love, and first, Sulaima, talk a little bit about your background, fill in what we should have said if we missed anything about your remarkable background and sort of your diverse geographies in the background.
Yeah, it's weird to see my CV and resume and the beautiful presentation of yours, Andrea. It's really a big honor. You know, I'm an immigrant. I'm a Danish-Moroccan immigrant. I grew up in a very white community, and all my life I was told that I should not have any kind of, you know, ambitions, because first of all, I'm a girl. I was a girl that time. I still am, but I'm a woman now, but a girl. And I was brown, and my name was Sulaima. And just for the record, Sulaima is not a normal name in Denmark. So, you know, I left school in seventh grade. I'm a seventh grade school dropout. I ran away from my parents. I lived in the street when I was 13. I grew up in foster homes, children's homes. You know, some of my best friends become prostitutes, criminals, you know. It's like social mobility, I think. I'm very fascinated about how you can change the birth lottery. And you are born in US and also in Denmark. We like to highlight Denmark as this, you know, poster child and, you know, the image of everything. And it really is. But we should not forget that a lot of kids are still struggling in Denmark as well to break through and change the birth lottery, right? And you are born into a network. You are born into a social standard and status in the country as well, just like US. And I know better than most people that what can happen in your life if you get access to a little bit of support, inspiration, and tools, and when someone holds you accountable, right? Miracles are happening. And so I'm all about, you know, I love that. I've been to some of the best universities in the world, Yale, HBS, you know, Stanford, Berkeley, ISB in India. I mean, I could just continue. I'm very privileged now with an MBA and great education, but I'm a seventh grade school dropout, right? And the thing is, there's so much knowledge out there, Andrea. There's so much knowledge out there, but it's hidden, you know, behind the walls of the best and most expensive education institutions. And I'm a rebel, right? I like to take that content and make it affordable and accessible for people, because that knowledge should not be hidden somewhere. It should be distributed so that people can get, you know, access to it and really use it. So I'm all about, you know, connecting the knowledge and the people, because if we are in this together, we will grow stronger. So it's true that the crisis will bring out the best in a lot of people, but it also do bring out the worst in some people and in some institutions. So that's probably my vision now. It is, and that's also why I created Women Reignite, was to help especially women, elevate them and give them access to the experts and the knowledge that they usually cannot afford to get access to. So for a very low price, I give that to them. So I think it's really about disruption now. And we have to forget, we have to stop thinking that I deserve a job. You know, a lot of people will be without a job, and that is something we need to address. I was never really a big fan of universal basic income. I was not, because, you know, there's some dignity in having a job. And, you know, I don't like the notion of just being paid and doing nothing. But we have a period of time, let's say for the next 1-2 years, 24 months, where we do need to find an emergent and urgent solution, because safety matters. And 40, 50 million people, ideally, without a good enough income and a very high sales of guns and things, you know, it's just a bad combination. So we have to find a solution here now for security. And I would have said that to you just 4 months ago that security and safety wasn't a big issue. It was an issue, but one of the biggest issues. So I worry for social unrest in US, in some countries in Europe as well, that do not have that safety net. So yeah, it was a long explanation, but yeah.
Well, I'm going to go backward in time, because I can't believe when we met, it was Herning, Denmark, which is in Jutland. And I was very pleased, because the same way you were talking about being, you know, out of sorts in society, it was my very first time in Denmark, and it was maybe, I don't know, what, 10 years ago or so. And there you were, keynote speaker. I was invited to be keynote speaker after you. Didn't understand that pretty much the entire day would be in Danish, and I had never been to Denmark before. And to watch you, and to watch how you were able to tell a story, but like bring people into a sense of potential and capacity, was remarkable. And I have followed you since, and you know, pleased that you live close by now. What to trace that moment where the point of that day, strangely, was to talk to a group of hundreds of business leaders in Jutland and sort of convince them that they should go digital. I mean, this is crazy, like e-commerce, that was a big idea that particular day. And now fast forward to so many new technologies and there's so many ways that you've taken that theme and moved forward. I know we're talking about talent, career, skills, but I also think that the technology side is important, because especially for getting people ready to be leaders in this next world. I think that, you know, X years ago it was e-commerce, but are there some tools that you think are just basic that every leader needs to just master right now to even have a seat at the table to be active as a leader?
It was a lot of compliments in just one sentence there, Andrea. Thank you so much. Yeah, I've been sharing my story for quite some time now. It might come as a surprise, but a lot of leaders do not know people like me. They don't socialize with families like mine. How would they know what a real struggle is? I'm sure they have had their struggles as well, but just different kinds. I'm talking about basic survival skills, you know. One of the reasons why I have accomplished this much as I have in my life is because my survival skill number one, Andrea, and that is networking. Because when you don't have food on the table, when you cannot afford to, you know, to get clean clothing, and you don't have a lunch bag, some kids learn to, you know, work around it and find people who can give them food and clothing and shelter. So really what made me survive that skill is now the skill that I now use to, you know, build and raise millions of dollars for companies. It's the same skill. So I was just, you know, persistent and resilient and lucky and all those things. So I have inspired, I don't know, maybe 50,000 people annually with my speeches, and I do 200 talks a year. So yeah, it's a lot of people I talk to. And I keep inspiring, because it's my hope, Andrea, really, it is my hope that the next time they look at someone in the streets or whatever, that they don't see only this person struggling, but they really see a person with a potential. We all have a potential. And believe it or not, but everyone has a talent, but most of people never find it, because nothing ignites it, nothing, you know, capture it. No one tells you that you have it. And sometimes your true talent can be extremely difficult to see, because you don't trust, you don't think it's a talent.
And that brings me to a very quick question. One of the things that the future-proofing community loves is examples. And a lot of our community is corporate leaders and scale-ups and companies that have leaders of teams within these large companies. Excuse me. Yeah. Corporations with leaders that are trying to promote this change. So I know that you've been moderating some World Economic Forum Young Global Leaders conversations. I know that you are part of the Thinkers 50 world. If you could kind of step back and think about some insights for corporate leaders and for leaders of the scale-ups, not necessarily the startups, but the scale-ups, the people who are already in business and trying to thrive through the lens of talent and through the lens of helping the skills that need to be there. But, you know, what's one example of something that you might say to leaders in this corporate world and in the scale-up world that you've observed?
Yes, I moderate every Saturday the Corona COVID-19 response for World Economic Forum. So I talk to head of states and prime ministers and, you know, I'm very fortunate. I do that every Saturday. And I'm part of 4 pandemic groups. So I'm pretty well informed about how the virus is impacting, you know, communities and companies. And so the one thing, there's always the need for a silver bullet, right? But the thing is, we are really in the unknown right now, but scalability really is back to network effects, right? So we need to find ways how to connect and mobilize customers, clients, youth, you know, access to talent. You know, you probably know this better than anyone, Andrea, but every time we hire people, it's a very biased system, you know. I'm sure Microsoft, they're doing a great job on this. I've been following their work for removing biased recruitment processes for years, but still, it's still a biased process. So every time we look at a person, whether that is a consultant or a future employee or whoever, we look for what I call the 4-factor rule. So if we have the same gender, higher trust, age, do we belong to the same generation? Gender, age, educational, and so, you know, an educational background and culture. So meaning race, right? Am I white? Am I black? Am I brown? So if we have those 4 factors in common, we can measure that there's a higher level of trust. And for us to succeed and scale in the future, scalability, Andrea, is really about productivity, unfortunately. So on one hand, you need to be more diverse because that's where the innovation lies. But on the other hand, production means the more similar we are, the more homogeneous we are, the more we produce, less conflicts we have, and the more we get done. So we are in a very difficult state of mind right now, because do we want to be innovative or productive? Because those two things in the beginning does not work really well hand in hand. And then we have all that uncertainty going on at the same time. So, but back to scalability, if you want to have a one silver bullet on scalability growth, you need to think about networks effect. And this is something that people continue to discuss. What does it mean to have network effect? But it has to be designed into every single little operational feature you have in your company. How do you scale? And that's something you have to master. It's a skill, right? But it's a mindset, really.
Well, this is always a conversation where everyone could be an hour in our own conversation. So thanks for that. I'm going to turn it back to Sean to go to the next conversation. And Sean, are you, is Sean there? Okay.
You forget. Thanks, Andrew. That was quite interesting. And I'm going to put all 4 of our panelists in the same box. Sulaima just brought up the fact that she's a bit of a rebel. Certainly in my discussions with Wagner, and I think everybody else, you know, if you're a change agent inside any type of company, you're a rebel. So, Wagner, I'm going to put 3 things together. You're in the most disrupted industry going, finance. You think about future of work 24/7, and you're a rebel. What does that actually lead to? What are you thinking about, like, on your day to day?
It leads to progress. Because it's interesting when I see Sulaima's experience, my experience, everybody's experience is very individualized. But at the end of the day, it is the diversity of experience that leads to the capabilities that we are building today. And for leaders, I was at Aspen Institute once. I don't know why they invite me, but they asked me for my opinion about the future of leadership education. And all the big MBA schools were there, and they're struggling because they're always lagging behind in this dynamic world. Now, when I think about COVID, they're going to be lagging way behind because it takes so much longer for them to come to a curriculum that makes sense, that's proven, validated. And I always say to my teams, when you transform, there is no guidance because actually research comes out after innovation. So leaders who are always attached to the latest or the research that's out there, those leaders are already showing signs of fear of the unknown. So my recommendation to leaders is accept what you don't know and accept the fact that we are all in this creating, co-creating, and reinventing ourselves every day. So to me, it was a reinvention of the self, a reinventioning of our thinking that's gonna lead us there. So when you think about talent, leaders have to be much more comfortable, to Salima's point, comfortable with unexpected individuals. So at Prudential, for example, we introduced Eightfold, is a great partner. They do AI and skills inference. And we are pushing for managers to start assessing and considering internal candidates with less skills adjacencies. We talk about skills that are similar and all that, but actually job descriptions don't tell the story. Managers don't know how to interview people for what they need. So it's a mishmash of miscommunication that leads to bias hiring. So what we are trying to do is, we know now, there's no paternalistic approach to this. I work for IBM. IBM is an incredible employer for their employees. Prudential does the same, but that does not necessarily correlate to taking care of your career for you. So when you have the tools shared across everyone, because before we had leaders who hide their value. The value was that communication, the information that nobody has, their leaders have. Nowadays, there is no such a thing. So the distributed power is influencing behaviors. And the way I see it is, we are gonna have to be comfortable really not knowing, being comfortable with people who may appear not to be the qualified individual, but might be your best candidate. So what are we assessing for? Let's talk about what we are assessing for in the future. We're assessing for previous experience. So the learning agility is still something that I think we need to consider. We need to look at people's ability to think quickly without being so attached to the norms of the past. I do have a psychotherapy background, of course. I love our IO psychologists, but at some point we are gonna have to make bets. And I think this is when leadership is real. When you start taking bets in risks to try to address something differently. So how do you do that? Through insights. But where do you gain insights? Through having a system. I like to provide the picture of reality with the three systems. Systems of record. You do need to trust the source of your information. Systems of insights. Those are created by the networks that we create for ourselves, and we start deriving insights. Actually, Howard Gardner is still my favorite author when he talks about the five minds of the future. In 2010, he talks about synthesizing mind. What is that mindset? Synthesizing all this information to create value. And I ask my own leaders at Prudential, what they need is these translators. How can you translate customer-driven needs through the systems of record and derive insights that is gonna create business value? That's what we need. But how do we hire for that? We hire for people who have creativity. IBM launched that study. CEO said in 2012 that the biggest skill that they need is creativity. And I think it's proven today after 8 years. So how do you assess for creativity? By interacting in a different way. You have to think and break the interviewing, behavioral interviewing, situational interviewing. I think we all love to follow guides because give us security, but that security might lead you to the wrong destination. And that's what we need to be comfortable with. Being comfortable, being fearful. Why not? Being courageous is just one piece of the pie. But if you don't have that vulnerability, people don't trust you anymore. So all this is coming to the surface now. And when I put together all this, I start thinking, okay, we do need a digital leader, because you need to be as fluid in the tools that we use as I am. We need leaders who abandon the preconceived ideas of who is the best candidate, because actually experience, being 10 years in a role, does not give me certainty that you know what's happening in the industry. You might have 10 years of 1 year of experience. So the whole idea of how do you create the workplace of the future, forget about if it is physical or digital. We don't need to discuss that because we are all interconnected. But what we need is to create a community that's vital for the individual and for the customer. How do you do that? stop the boundaries of functional collaboration that create silos. Start creating project-based activity. We are doing that at Prudential now. Actually, we have so much to share. But it's incredible how it changed the dynamics. Because who owns the talent? No one. No one owns talent. So it's so exciting what's about to happen. But you need people who are really flexible, very agile, but not in the agility that we talked about. But it's just being dynamic in decision-making without paralysis. So systems of record, systems of insights leads to systems of engagement. Those are the systems that I'm focusing on. How do you engage employees in co-creating the future? Because that's the best way to prepare for it, right? So I'm in that mindset, the mindset that potential everybody has, capabilities, the secret sauce. What is the organizational capability we are creating? What are the cluster of skills? It's not just one skill or one experience. What is the cluster of skills that are gonna lead to this new organizational design where things are much more fluid and actually the corporation will own the responsibility for all this, but actually nobody owns the talent. So that's where I am. I think it's a much more dynamic world that we are not used to.
Yeah, and just a quick one on this, because you had mentioned, because I know we're gonna get to the next two panelists and hopefully get to everybody at the end, but a quick one on, you had mentioned being comfortable with not knowing, but there's also a new dynamic as well, I guess, in terms of being comfortable with trusting at least a little bit the technology that sits beside you. You've got a steeped background at IBM, and certainly you're applying some of what you've probably learned at Prudential. What can you tell us about the future skills of the world where, you know, your coworker might actually be a computer, not another person?
Yes. And we already had that Watson. When you have the commercials for Watson for IBM, you see the coworkers right there sitting on a chair, but it's a computer. What happens is this, we are not ready for this because I think the human capacity to tolerate uncertainty is limited. But when you think about quantum computing, when you think about the exponential growth in the capacity to compute data information that's unstructured, it blows your mind. When I used to go to Poughkeepsie to see the quantum computing, the computer that we have, it's incredible, the experience, because if you think we have the capacity to understand the virus, the transmission, and the contact tracing and all that, imagine in 10 years from now, we are gonna have the capacity to understand what's the infection rate in each person in the world in probably in seconds. So all I'm saying is, we are on the trajectory that we can all look back and say, I wish things can go back to the way they were, because they can't and they won't, and there's no need for that. But when you think about this whole notion of computers being your coworkers, I think we are really very used to this. We are really very attached to our laptops. Nobody works by themselves anymore. So I think the whole technology, the skills, the last thing I say, we are trying to assess what the future is skills. Actually, we have a lot of good companies doing this, but at the end of the day, computing skills and technology is advancing at a rapid rate. So why not focus on the current moment? What do you need right now? Because you have plenty to work with. You don't need to go to the future. Work with what you have right now, create an incredibly energizing community of people, and you'll get your outcomes.
The future truly is now, right? So, all right, we're gonna circle back at the end. Over to you, Andrea.
So, Matteo, you and I are going to go into as part of the conversation. I feel like there's a million things to say, but is for you to explain a bit about your experience and this talent and talents and rebels, the book that you've written, because to me, it crystallizes some of the themes we've talked about. And maybe we're on mute.
No, I think we're good, right?
Okay, good. Yeah, hear you great now.
So first of all, Suleiman Wagner, thank you so much, because you know, I should have interviewed you, you know, for the book if we had the chance to meet before, because so many of you know, the concepts that you expressed are actually probably one of the many reasons why I decided to write something like this. My background is actually not as an HR guy at all. I am a mere sort of, guy that tried to write his own experience. My background is in financial services and fintech especially. And fintech was born in 2008 out of the Lehman Brothers crisis. I mean, the fintech that everyone knows about today, right? And if I now take this under the perspective of, hiring or coping with a different type of talent, my story at Swift, which is one of the most conservative companies ever, a cooperative, very traditional, back in 2008, they decided to build some sort of an innovation arm, and they asked to myself and three other people that were really even looked like rebels kind of back then without knowing it, to build something that it was called InnoTribe back then, the tribe of innovation. And basically it gave birth to, the first global startup challenge, of which TransferWise was a winner, and then Revolut and all these guys. And then all of a sudden, in 2013, I left Swift because I couldn't manage to build a fund inside the company to invest in these startups. Bear with me, there is a reason why I'm telling you this story. And then 5 years later, I realized that none of the people that back then built that innovation arm work at Swift anymore. So I said, maybe there is a way to make corporates understand that if they keep hiring the same type of talent, it's very unlikely that they will do disruptive innovation. They would rather cope just an incremental one, which has nothing wrong with it, but is just doing a little bit better what they do already. But there is no way that they can capture, the disruptive dimension of their business, because no one will be able to have the right, thinking, to look at things in that way. And on the other hand, try to federate all these lateral thinkers, rebels, misfits, call it however you want. But what I do know is that every time I talk about this, I present the book, or I talk about failure as a way to rediscover yourself, there are plenty of people that either write me or come and say, Matteo, thank you so much, because one, A, I felt I was alone. B, I didn't know what was wrong with me. I actually thought that I was an outsider that would never adapt to any corporate environment. When I actually believe that, especially, in the post-COVID, in the post-crisis, not because COVID has a particular dimension of or differences with any other crisis, but simply because the moment to start daring about being different, 9 out of 10 kinds out of a crisis moment, right? So that's why I decided to write this book as a simple, inspired by my own story. And then I wanted to talk with a bunch of other people that I thought I had a weird experience, right? And I put in a book, and then all of a sudden, I sort of understood I was into something when in one of the first presentations I said, okay, guys, I was actually talking with a bunch of bankers, no? And I said, okay, how do you distinguish a rebel, this type of talent? How do you do this, right? And I said, okay, guys, now focus for a second and think of these guys that, or lady, that seems kind of smart, but is not the one who is promoted, doesn't really care about managing a lot of people or power or whatever title he or she has on the business card, but more about impact and relevance. He has some sort of aura, there is some sort of aura around this person, but no one really grasps why, right? Do you have anyone in mind? I mean, if you work with an over 1,000 people company, and everyone like sort of nodded. So this is the first thing. And the second thing is that the last thing you want to do is, I call them like reverse discriminate this type of talent. So the last thing you want is, these are not Avengers, superheroes, or like people to put in a, like in a zoo, because they have to be looked in a different way. No, just as you as analysts, managers, leaders, you have misfits that, in my humble opinion and experience, they have the right to be considered as resources, which is what I hope is what Wagner was saying when he was mentioning different type of talents, right? And I would give you a hug post-COVID whenever we meet in person, just for that, and for being Brazilian.
So I'll do one more question. Once again, there's a longer conversation that we have had in the author's studio, which is another segment that we do. One of the things I think is really relevant to this context, though, is, so imagine that we've heard about corporates and scale-ups and startups, and everyone's, you know, theoretically liking to have diversity. In reality, the lazy man is, or woman, excuse me, the lazy person says, yeah, that would be great. You know what? Let me just take this person that I'm comfortable with for now. What's the danger of not figuring out how to tap into the true rebels' talents, or on the other hand, putting them in a zoo? You know, what do corporates miss out on?
So I think that the world is full of large corporations or scale-ups, as you call them, that missed the right train because they didn't see it, but they don't do this as a company, right? Behind every bad decision, misinterpretation of the business, or simply lack of seeing the future, there are actually people who missed it, right? Because at the end of the day, people are the one who made the decision. So, and you know, without talking about the usual suspects, you know, big failures, super famous in the Harvard Business School case studies, but you know, I've been an investor since I left Swift in 2013, because what, of course, Swift didn't manage me to do it inside, I did it outside. And too bad, because Swift would be sitting in $1 billion, you know, fund after all, because all these small startups, they pass through the Swift umbrella. But I saw so many scale-ups missing an opportunity to, let me say, surviving their own victory. Because sometimes you think that you're so strong that you got it all, but you don't plan for, as I said, once you rule, you know, keeping a throne is so much more difficult than winning a new one. And that is not me, it's a Game of Thrones sentence. So
awkwardly, I need to jump immediately into Karen so we can get her to say something, and then we'll save you for the end. So Sean, jump into Karen, and I know that we have an overly enthusiastic timing here.
Yeah, Andrea, honestly, I just sent Sean a note. I truly have to jump in what is now a minute, so it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to ask me a question that I won't even have time to answer. So, but I'm always on LinkedIn, so if anybody would like to connect on anything you see on the screen, I'm always more than happy to do it.
Thanks, Karen.
So, Sean,
I appreciate that, and I'm sure people will take advantage of that, and perhaps there's a way to get your opinions on a follow-up post of some sort. I know, and I apologize, I know we're going late, a lot of passion, a lot of interesting kind of fodder for discussion. This is what we usually do at the end, we do an around the horn where kind of you've heard other people chat about their variant on this topic, and just maybe get a reaction and maybe a takeaway that you leave from the discussion. Heard from you. Why don't you weigh in on what you've heard and maybe what your gestalt is?
You know, one of the skills that we do not recognize enough is the power of listening, right? I mean, we always reward people for speaking, but really we should be rewarding people for listening, because that is really where we learn. So I actually don't mind being the one listening. But thank you for inviting me to say something. I think Wagner and Matteo, you said so many great things. What I really like what you both were talking about was the cluster of skills. You know, we can accomplish so much more if we know our own skills and if we have mapped out what the people we know, what their skills are. Because when you combine your own skills with other people's skills, there's really nothing we cannot accomplish in world. So I also want to say Procter & Gamble. I worked with them years back, and I'm still amazed by the fact that if you are a rebel, they will actually protect you at the HR department. Like, you have a special code and they know that you are maybe difficult to work with. You might irritate people, but we should protect you as a company. We should protect you because that's something to think about. Because if you are different, you will be bullied, or, you know, because bullied is maybe a big word, but in lack of finding a better word, being different is not easy, but we need people who think differently. And a manager, as a leader, as a community, how to protect the upstanders, the outliers, the underdogs. We really need to think about that. And I want to highlight just four things. It takes less than 30 seconds. The future of skills, I think, can be narrowed down to SMAC. Mobilizing, being mobile, flexible, and analytics, right? We need people who can analyze, critical thinking, deep thinking, execution skills, very important, based on data, not based on thinking or what I believe, but true data. And then cloud, you know, make sure that everyone can access what you do, make sure that people can work together, even despite being in different. If you ask me for one sentence, SMAC is the future of skills, really what we need.
You're stroking my P&G background here, both referencing the term we used to always call SMAC goals when we were there too. So using the same acronym. We're going to have to wrap it up quickly, but Wagner, give me your best.
Matteo, because he literally is about to jump off. He only has one minute. So, but sorry, Matteo, go ahead.
No, they're like super fast. I think that it is fantastic how everyone is thinking disruptively about new ways, the different type of talents in organizations. And I would love to continue the discussion anytime. I'll probably contact you guys because I would love to have some more of your thinking. Thank you.
Great. See you soon. And you can jump off. It's not rude at all. Thank you, Matteo.
Thank you. Bye-bye, guys. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Sean, back to you. Sorry.
I would just say, Wagner, give me your pearls of wisdom over 40 seconds here.
Oh, I give you in 20 seconds.
All right.
Leadership is energy. Leadership is energy. And the three C's of leadership is immutable: curiosity, courage, and compassion. I don't think I need to say much more.
That's a lot of good insight in 20 seconds. Wow, we've had a really good webcast today, Andrea. I don't know. Do you want to summate from our own future proofing now standpoint?
Well, I think from my perspective, we start with a lot of. I thought that what you just said, curiosity, and courage, is what the second one, and compassion. You know, like we go bravely into these conversations, but learning is remarkable. Every time we're with people who are in a position to lead, we learn. So can't thank you enough. And we can thank you, and you're welcome to exit. And Sean and I can wrap up and really value the time that you've spent with us.
Wonderful, guys.
Thank you. See you soon.
And just a few housekeeping notes. I know our next two webcasts, we tend to do these once every 2 weeks. We've got an exciting one around roots to innovation. I've spent a lot of time thinking about that over the last little bit. Like, you just don't have to use your research and development department. And some stuff around cybersecurity and cyber trust, which could be our next Black Swan moment too. We have a great newsletter. Hopefully it'll intrigue you enough to sign up and just connect with us at futureproofingnext.com. Myself and Andrea are crazy enough to launch a book. We had delayed it because of a pandemic, but we can't delay anymore. It has to be revealed and out. So hopefully you'll you'll be able to see that on May 25th. We're also running an open forum guild where we've got about 100 thinkers throughout the world that are trying to make sense of this pandemic and put it into a document in production that that hopefully makes it make sense for others. If you want to join, join at hello@futureproofingnext.com. Want to thank our panelists again. I apologize to Karen for, I know she was on a very tight kind of hourly schedule. So I'll make sure that we echo her thoughts later. And you can see those people at LinkedIn there. And for other people, we've got in about 20 minutes time, another podcast that's related on the same topic called The After Hours, part of this, where we'll get straight into the discussion right away with three other panelists that may have been on today's webcast weighing in. Andrea, I'm not too sure if you want to add any other further points to what we've got, but.
Well, just in the interest of time, thanks to Louis Eddy, who asked, can we please throw some more light on leadership with compassion? I assume that that's for Wagner. We will circle back with him and maybe even include that in our next after hours. So I think we might start with that, this notion of leadership with compassion. So that's a sneaky way of saying, why don't you come to the after hours as well? And if that doesn't do enough, you know, the connection with Wagner on LinkedIn, I'm sure is open. And no, this is another time and not a lot to add. There was just a lot to think about. And I'm very much looking forward to circling back with everyone. I like everyone basically talked about ecosystem network and the ability to have the energy of leaders that is somewhat infectious so that it's a community that learns together. So I feel really lucky that we have the Future Proofing Next community to share with and learn from. So back to you, Sean.
And just quickly, for those that have been on this webcast and feel like they haven't been satiated with our hit, I've added the link for our After Hours webcast in the chat box if you're interested in joining us. We should probably wrap this up, as I know people govern their lives based on hour intervals, but I want to thank our panelists. I want to thank Andrew and Joanne. I also want to thank our audience for coming in. Thank you so much, and we'll be seeing you in the future.